All right, let us look into Proverbs chapter 23. As we start, let us first read the entire chapter and I will go through section by section. Proverbs chapter 23. When you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for they are deceptive food. Do not overwork to be rich because of your own understanding. Cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. Do not eat the bread of a miser, nor desire his delicacies. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. The morsel you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless, for the Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you. Apply your heart to instruction and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. My son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself. Yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day. For surely there is a hereafter, and your hope will not be cut off. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Do not mix with wine bibblers, nor with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe the man with rags. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it, also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways, for a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. She also lies in wait, asks for a victim, and increases the unfaithful among men. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink? We've been going through this book of Proverbs, and there's a lot of different practical applications that we can get from this book, and this chapter is no exception. In fact, this chapter has many different topics. As I was going through that, I could divide this into having wisdom against certain things, or having wisdom to do certain things. So I like to give a high-level headings for each of those sections, and I'll go through that. The first part of the chapter starts with warning against luxury, sensuality, and indulgence. Then we see warning against love of money, riches, or treasures, or materialism. We also see dissociate from fools. we see discipline our children. Then we see bad company and its pitfalls. We also see honoring our parents. And finally, we see the dangers of alcohol consumption or indulgence in habits, which are not enriching us in our spiritual life. So these are the different things that we can see. And as we go through that, how much more do we really need wisdom in order to tackle these things? And as I was reading through that, you know, we as human beings, even though we are believers, we cannot stand in our own strength in order to stand against these forces which are powerful. But we need the grace of God. We need the wisdom of God in order to stand firm in our faith. So as we see in the beginning of this chapter, it talks about eating with a ruler and to be careful. And I was looking at the word, consider carefully what is before you. And I thought that was a very interesting statement, not just in the context of eating, but in our day-to-day lives. Are we considering what is in front of us? Are we careful? Or are we carefully examining the things that are in front of us? In this context, we see a table. We see a ruler who is giving a lot of food, and it is very tempting for the writer as he writes, or he's exhorting us that when we face temptations, you know, we face a danger of falling into sin. Now, temptations in itself is not sin, but temptations can lead to sin. And how much more do we have to recognize when temptation knocks at the door? And that is where wisdom comes into play, where we have the discretion and the foresight to see what is going to happen ahead of us. With the grace of God, we are able to face temptation and not fall into sin. As we look into the scriptures, we see so many examples, and I can think of Joseph when he was facing those temptations, and how he responded to that gives us an insight on how we can also fight and run away from temptations and not to face it and think that we can handle it. So we have to double our guard when we are facing situations in life. We have to consider diligently what is before us. And that phrase is a very critical phrase to keep in mind. We have to carefully consider what is before us. And what are we trying to consider? What is safe? What we have to consider what is safe. Or in other words, in this context, to eat something least so that we don't eat in excess. Or sometimes that is where we go into indulgence by taking something which we don't consider the portions. Or in a spiritual sense, that we try to face against temptations in our own strength and we fall into that. So we have to consider the company we are with, and we have to avoid any unworthy participation, which can become a trap, it can be a snare. And for that, we definitely need wisdom. So it's a very important piece to keep in mind as we continue in our spiritual walk, how much more we need to have wisdom so that we can consider things carefully, examine it, analyze it, and make sure that is worthy of what is in front of us. As we turn to Philippians chapter 4, there is a very familiar verse which oftentimes comes to my mind, verse 8. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So here we see Paul is exhorting us to keep things that are true, that are praiseworthy, noble. But how do we know the difference of it? It is by wisdom that we can examine things, and by the grace of God that we can stand firm and be able to face temptation and run away from it rather than succumb to it. Because temptations can lead us into a trap where there's no return. And we know the story of Samson, a man who was ordained by God, whose birth was proclaimed by the angel. But what happened to him? The temptation was too strong, and he thought he could stand on his own strength. And eventually we know what happened to him. In Jude chapter, in Jude verse 12, we see one of the natures of the apostates is that they feed themselves without fear. We see that in Jude verse 12. So that is one of the natures of people who are going contrary to God, that they feed themselves without any kind of fear or any kind of fear of retribution. But as believers, now if we can fill ourselves with the fear of God, it'll help us to stand our ground. It'll help us to be conscious of the temptation that is in front of us. And we can reason ourselves into a holy contempt. And in this context, we can lay an axe to the root and mortify this very appetite that can overwhelm us. And we can see that in the picture of the man cutting a tree by the roots. We can put an axe to this enormous indulging appetite, and we can subdue the corruption that is in front of us. So sin is like a luxurious appetite which will never satisfy us. It is more like someone drinking salt water. The more you drink, the more you feel salty, and the more you get salty, you can drink more and more, and it'll never satisfy us. And sin is like that. It could be tasty to the palate, but sour to the stomach. In verses 4 and 5, we see a warning against the love of money, riches, treasures, or materialism. Covetousness is something that we can fall into it. Setting our hearts on money or materialism is very dangerous. We need money to live, but the love of money can drive us in a different direction. It can take us away from God. It can take us in a path where we think that we are strong and we are able to handle ourselves. A covetous man will toil and torment himself. That is a very factual statement. The more we covet, we can toil and torment ourselves to the end of it, to lead us into destruction. A very familiar passage to look into is 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. It's a very important piece to keep reminding ourselves to be content, to be godly. Godliness with contentment is great gain. And we see that in verse 10, a very familiar verse that we oftentimes read, that the love of money is the root of all kinds of evils. It is not the money itself, but the love of money can lead us into evil. And we see here that it can pierce themselves through many sorrows. So covetousness and putting our mind on earthly things, materialism, can be very dangerous. Our aim is not to be rich, but our aim as believers is to be sufficient. And there's a difference between the two. Richness can lead us to more and more, but the Lord is leading us to a point where we are sufficient, because God is our all-sufficient God, that my God should supply all your needs. That's what we read in Philippians by Apostle Paul, that the Lord Jesus is the one where we find the whole sufficiency for each one of us. In Proverbs 30 and verse 8, we'll come to that eventually. We see the writer says, give me neither poverty nor riches. Either one can be a problem. If we are poor, we'll start to complain against God. If we are rich, we go against God. We forget him. So there's always a balance that we should have to have a place where we are not neither poor nor rich. Sometimes in the pursuit of greater things, we miss out on what is important in life. And we try to fill our hands with something that it is more than what we can grasp. It's like a kid putting a hand inside a cookie jar, and the more you clench your fist, you're not able to pull it out. But the kid is not willing to put the hand out because he wants the candy from inside. But the more you clench your fist, you are preventing yourself from releasing your hand from the bottle. So sometimes life is like that. We are trying to fill ourselves with things more than what we can grasp. So this life can become a constant toss of anxiety and fear. And if you look into the world, we see the people who are at peace most of the time are those who have little in life. You know, if you look around, the rich people are always anxious. They're always fearful. They cannot have a proper sleep. But look at the people on the street. They have little in life, but they are peaceful. So riches are like eagles, as we read here in this passage. We see here in verse 5, they fly away like an eagle toward heaven. So riches are like that. It can fly away from us. It'll leave us. It'll leave us in pain, anger, and grief. So we have to be careful that we don't let riches overwhelm us. Nor we should go in the pursuit of riches and forget who we are in Christ. May God give us the wisdom in doing that. It's very, very practical things as we read this chapter. In verses 6 through 11, we see to dissociate ourselves from fools. Because the more we interact with them, we become like them. We cannot stand and listen to them, nor should we entertain such foolish thoughts in our lives, because that can drive us away from who we are. The fool says in his heart, there's no God. And that is how they live. Their whole precept is all about the fact that there's no God. They're not accountable to anyone. And we cannot put ourselves in the company of fools. That'll lead us away from God. Verses 11 through 16 is also a very important piece, disciplining our children. It's a sacred duty of parents to correct their children. We all know the statement, spare the rod and spoil the child. You know, discipline is not joyous. I know parents can always testify to that. It is not joyful to discipline a child. Even with the children being sad, the parents are also sad. You know, it's a no-win situation, but it has to be done so that with the wisdom given with the discipline, we know that it is designed for good, accompanied by prayer, and blessed by God. And when you have those things together, it puts life in perspective of leading a family life with children and having a family unit, praising God and living an exemplary spiritual family life. So disciplining our children are very important. We see a lot of examples where parents, you know, they don't like to do that. There are parents who don't like to discipline. But the scripture teaches us that we have to discipline. But we have to do with the grace, wisdom, for their good, accompanied by prayer and desire that the children will grow in their spiritual life. And eventually, the family unit will be blessed by God. So that is the whole entire picture of why discipline has to come into play. And in 3 John, we see that Apostle John says, there's no greater joy than to see my children walk in truth. And that can be also applied to parents. You know, as John the Apostle in his old age was writing this, the context of love throughout these epistles, he says that it is no greater joy than to see my children walk in truth. And let that be our desire as well as parents, that even through the discipline that we can see our children walking in truth. And that is how we can build up a family life as a unit for God's glory and for his kingdom. Verses 17 and 18 talks about bad company and its pitfalls. And this is another place that we can fall into that, where we try to imitate sinful people, or we try to imitate people in our circle. Like, for example, young people, there's always a pressure to go with the flow in schools because it's kind of cool to be with the other crowd. And it is not cool to stay away and be set apart. So sometimes we fall into the trap of imitating or being part of that group. We see in Psalm chapter 73 about the story of Asaph. You know, Asaph was very envious when he saw the prosperity of the wicked. And if you read the chapter, it is a very powerful reminder that oftentimes we look at people around us and we think, you know, those people are doing really well. They're godless. They're living for themselves, but they are so successful in a worldly sense. And we tend to define their prosperity by what they have, oftentimes neglecting on what we have in our lives. So Asaph was very envious at that time. He was looking at the prosperity of the wicked. It was painful for him to comprehend. We read that. And towards the end of the chapter, we see, until he went to the sanctuary of the Lord. And then he understood therein. Until then, it was painful for him to see how the sinful people were enjoying and having a great time. And for us also, keeping our mind not looking at temporary things which are only lasting for a little while, but looking at the big picture of eternal things and seeing that these joys that the sinful people have is only for a moment. But what we have in our hearts is for eternity. So that is where we have to keep our mind. So again, it is a perspective that we have to practice and not imitate or go with the flow with other people and fall into the pressure of putting ourselves in those companies. Verses 19 through 28 talks about honoring our parents. Again, coming back to family life, we see it's an advice to young people to heed to their godly parents. These are very profitable instructions. Children will be a joy to their parents if they are righteous and wise. And we see in verse 19, guide your heart in the way. In verse 23, we see, buy the truth and sell it not. Because without truth, there is no goodness. So right principles will lead to regular practice. So we should not part this for worldly pleasures. We have to know the truth and let that truth dictate our lives. In verse 26, we see, give me your heart. It is not like half and half. You know, sometimes we think we can put our feet on two boats. We can do this and this. But God is requiring and seeking and desiring that we have an undivided heart to him. We cannot love God and the world at the same time. As we see by John the Apostle, do not love the world. If you have the love of the world, the love of the Father is not in you. So we cannot have both of them. So we have to have an undivided heart, an attention to God and for his kingdom. In verse 26, we see, let thy eyes observe my ways. Observing is important. So as children, as we see our own children in growing up, a family unit is a perfect unit for God's glory if these principles are properly applied. Parents disciplining their children with the desire of what making them be trained in the Lord, and the children respecting the parents. For that, parents have to be good testimonies at home. A lot of the times we see pitfalls where people are not testimonies at home, but rather they are outside. And that is what the children are seeing. And that disconnect can drive them away from what we preach and practice. So we have to be careful that even as we desire our children to honor the parents have a responsibility to live lives that are exemplary, spiritual, godly lives, so that the children can see what they see is what the parents are preaching. So it is important to follow these guidelines. And finally, we see the dangers of alcohol consumption. This is a warning against drunkenness. And verse 31 is very important. It says here, look not on the wine when it is red. You know, the color red is so attractive. And that is why we see wine can be tempting. A sight can charm us to lead us and lead us to covetousness. It can bite us like a serpent, as we read towards the end of the chapter. It can lead to quarrels, woe, and sorrow. When people are controlled by wine, you know, they are in a different realm altogether. And they're not thinking right. Their practices, their thinking, everything is compromised. So we have to be careful, and the writer is warning against drunkenness. It makes men to impurity. If you read verse 33, we see that your heart will utter perverse things. It can lead men and women to impurity. It can lead to cloudy judgments. And it can make us fearless of danger that is lurking around us. And it can make us senseless to rebukes that are given to us. So wine can be a major problem, and when we are controlled by wine, we are not thinking right. We feel that we can handle everything by ourselves. We are not seeing the danger that is lurking, and then we are not willing to listen to the rebukes. So in a larger sense, I would say that we should not let anything control us other than the Spirit of God. And that is also a good example to keep in mind, even as we talk about wine. But in a bigger sense, is there anything else controlling us other than the Spirit of God? And that is something that we have to keep in mind. And so these are all good instructions to keep in our lives. And as we go through these chapters, and as I talked about warning against luxury, against materialism, dissociating ourselves from fools, disciplining our children, talking about bad company, and honoring our parents, and the dangers of alcoholism, all these things lead us back to the main crux of it, that is wisdom. How much more we need wisdom in order to live lives that are pleasing to God, in order to see what is in front of us and be able to stand against these strong forces with the grace of God. And may God help us to continue to seek the wisdom of God so that we can stand our ground, we can live lives that are pleasing to Him, and through this, may His name be glorified. Thank you.